I'd like to welcome you all to this patient caregiver call titled Seizure First Aid and Other Safety Concerns for People with Epilepsy. My name is Sean Gamble, and I'm from the Employee Education Service in St. Louis, and I'm the project manager for this call. Your lines are muted and will be opened up at the end of presentation when we are ready for questions, but please limit your questions to one or two per person to ensure everybody has a chance to ask. To complete the evaluation for this program, please follow the link found in the brochure or the link that was found from the Epilepsy Center of Excellence that was sent out. If you do not have access to the VA website, if you're a patient, you can contact me at sean.gamble@va.gov, and I will send you a hard copy. Now I'd like to welcome our speaker for today, Denise Riley.
Thank you, Sean. Welcome, everyone. I hope you can hear me clearly. I'm here in sunny, windy Florida. So on behalf of the VA's Epilepsy Centers of Excellence, it's my great pleasure to make today's presentation on seizure first aid and safety concerns. My goal in today's presentation is to provide you with some practical information and guidance in safeguarding those who have epilepsy. If you have seizures, telling others can actually save your life, because it's important that your friends and family know what to do and what not to do if you're having a seizure. And telling people about your seizures also helps clear misconceptions about epilepsy.
Someone has entered the conference.
And promote epilepsy awareness. I've broken down today's presentation into the following categories: first aid, seizure triggers, keeping your home safe, tobacco and alcohol, medications, employment, sports, travel, special considerations for women, and SUDEP, which is sudden unexpected death in epilepsy. Now, there are some basic guidelines that should be followed no matter what kind of a seizure a person is experiencing.
Someone has entered the conference.
John, is there any way we can mute the entering of conference?
Let me find out.
Thank you. So if all you do, keep calm. Protect the person from injury and stay near them until he or she is fully alert. Don't hold the person seizing down, and do not put anything in their mouth. Don't give them food or drink until you're sure that they're fully alert, and look for any type of medic alert identification. So when we look at specific seizures, let's start with simple partial seizures, or seizures where there is no alteration of the person's consciousness. These types of seizures can manifest themselves in different ways. There can be uncontrollable sensations such as hallucinations, funny smells, or visual changes. Or it can manifest itself with psychic characteristics like uncontrolled emotions, sensations of deja vu, or a dreamy state. It can also be autonomic changes like increased heart rate, pale face, large dilated pupils, and lastly, it can be uncontrollable body movements. For simple partial seizures, you usually don't have to do anything. Just stay calm and reassure the person that they're safe. And if the person is frightened or anxious, encourage them to take slow, deep breaths and stay with them until the seizure is over. Now, when a person has complex partial seizures, or seizures where there is an alteration in consciousness, he or she is not aware of what's going on around them. So it's important to recognize common symptoms such as blank staring, chewing motions, fumbling with the hands, picking or rubbing fingers, wandering around, and confused speech. It's important to time the seizure and stay with the person and don't let them wander away. Speak calmly, even though they may not understand what you're saying to them, and keep them away from any danger. If the person tries to run or is in a dangerous situation, call out for help and hold them back if you need to keep them out of the danger. And again, don't assume that they can understand you and follow instructions. The person should be fully conscious and aware before being left on their own. Make sure they know the date, where they are, and where they are going. And if it is the person's first seizure or awareness does not return, you should call 911. And the witness to the seizure should tell the person who had the seizure and EMS personnel what happened and how long the seizure lasted. Now, the most common type of seizure we are all familiar with is a convulsive seizure, or what we used to call cramp hall. And these types of seizures can actually last a minute or two without any harm, and usually do not require a call to 911 or a visit to the emergency room unless, number one, it's the person's first seizure, number two, the seizure lasts 5 minutes or more, number three, awareness does not return, number four, the person has a second seizure, number five, it's a pregnant woman, or lastly, if the person sustained an injury, a serious injury. Once again, time the seizure. Try and roll the person on one side with their head and mouth angled toward the ground so that excessive saliva is swallowed or inhaled. Putting them in this position also prevents the tongue from falling back and blocking the airway. And put something soft under their head, like a jacket. Loosen their clothes by unfastening their top shirt buttons, their belt, and their pant buttons. And also remove any eyeglasses or neck chains. You don't have to worry if the person has contact lenses. Don't hold the person down, and again, do not put anything in their mouth. And it can also be embarrassing for the person to awaken to a crowd of people looking at them. So after the seizure is over, the eyewitness should tell the person who had the seizure what happened and how long the seizure lasted. And the person should be conscious and aware before being left on their own. Make sure they know the date, where they are, and where they are going. It's recommended that if a person has a history of these convulsive seizures that cluster or are prolonged, that the caregiver have medication such as Diastat or Lorazepam, which is Ativan, on hand to abort and minimize seizure activity. So exactly what provokes a seizure, even when you're taking your medications the way you should? Well, we've all heard about seizure triggers. There are things that seem to increase the number or severity of seizures. And these seizure triggers include sleep deprivation, stress, illness, certain medications, alcohol, recreational drugs, and caffeine. I want to stress that not every person is affected the same way. And although we may not fully understand how these factors trigger seizures, I think it's important for you to have a better understanding of what we do know. So I'm going to start with the more common ones. Let's start with sleep deprivation. Sleep deprivation rarely occurs in a vacuum, but usually it's in association with some sort of physical or emotional stress, and sometimes some substance abuse. And exactly how it might activate epileptic regions of the brain is unclear. What we do know is there are some changes in brain electrical activity during deprivation that makes the brain more susceptible to seizure activity. And we also believe that there are some hormonal changes that could possibly be related.
Without
alcohol, there are two issues here. First, a person with epilepsy is at an increased risk of or more alcoholic beverages. And alcohol in the presence of seizure medication lower your tolerance for alcohol and cause rapid intoxication. This in turn can lead to missing your medicine, increasing the metabolism and elimination of your medication, falling and causing yourself injury, and sleep deprivation. have people who have a history of alcohol abuse. They are known to have increased risks of developing. The seizures will typically occur when the alcohol is suddenly stopped or reduced over a short period of time. This can happen during illness, a hospital admission, or when the person is unable to acquire the alcohol. And repeated withdrawal seizures make the brain more excitable, and then seizures can occur regardless of how much or little alcohol is there. Another seizure trigger is stress. During stress, our body releases a hormone called cortisol. This cortisol rushes to the brain and hammers the hippocampus, which is an area of the brain associated with excitability. The release of cortisol will also increase the level of excitatory neurotransmitters. Neurotransmitters are brain chemicals that affect everything, like food, sleep, concentration, telling our heart to beat, our lungs to breathe. When we talk about recreational drugs, one of the most common ones I've seen abused are cocaine and marijuana. Not only are they illegal, but cocaine, like alcohol, can actually increase your risk of seizures due to toxicity or withdrawal. Now, an important seizure is change of your seizure medications from brand to generic and between generic forms. Generic seizure medications can be safely prescribed in certain situations, but switching has been associated with a higher risk of breakthrough seizures, adverse side effects, and toxicity. And this is because the concentration of the generic version can range from 80% to 125%. So prescribing in this setting actually is a challenge, because there is an average of 10 generic versions per brand. So my advice to my patients is to have them check their medications when they pick it up at the pharmacy. If the pills look different than usual, I tell them to notify the pharmacist, have him call whoever prescribed them, and in that case. I have some advice that is specific to women, and I'm surprised at how many women are not aware of this. But there are some women with epilepsy who have a twofold increase in seizure frequency just prior to their cycle, in the middle of the cycle, or just after the cycle. This is often referred to as catamenial seizures. It's a response to the higher ratio of estrogen, excitatory hormone, or a decreased ratio of progesterone.
Thank you.
And these kinds of situations are important for your provider to know that medication can be appropriately prescribed during those times. Now let's look at keeping you safe at home. People with epilepsy can cook, but it's recommended they use the back burners. And an electric stove is safer than gas, but the most safe way to prepare for those with seizures, of course, is the microwave. And I always recommend that cooking should be done when someone else is in the house. Fire house, glass table to be avoided. Faucets have a temperature control device. People with epilepsy should not lock their bathroom door or bedroom door, and if at all possible, the doors should try and open outwards so that someone can get in if a person has falls against the door.
Hello?
Should avoid sharp edges on furniture, and if seizures involve falling out of bed, consider placing on the floor. And then we've all heard, I'm sure, that a shower is recommended rather than a bath to the risk of drowning. I tell my patients that if possible, they inform their neighbors about their seizure disorder, try describing what they can do if the need arises. Have all your necessary health comforts in a prominent and easy-to-find spot in your home. And please get yourself a Medic Alert bracelet or pendant that states you have a seizure disorder. Unfortunately, many public service personnel, such as officers, don't always know enough about epilepsy, and they just assume that you are drunk or on drugs in the middle of a seizure. For women, please make sure that your healthcare provider knows if you suddenly begin taking hormonal birth control, because hormonal birth control can actually affect your medication, or your seizure medication can decrease the effectiveness of your birth control. And if you have a baby, don't bathe it in a tub if you're alone, but rather give it a sponge bath with bathe in the crib and your container of water outside the crib. The rocking chair during breastfeeding and the holding baby for the pillow cushion baby. Try a kitchen or portable crib on each level of your home. Should you have an aura, you can baby down and keep it safe. Your medications always locked away and out of reach from children. And when your children are older and can understand, it's always good to explain to them why you take medications and what they should do if you have a seizure. It's amazing how resilient children can be. They can learn to help and care for younger siblings during a seizure. With your baby, place a sticker on their stroller with their name and emergency information in the event of you having a seizure. And if you have a toddler and you're taking him out for a walk, try and use a wrist harness for his safety should you have a seizure. Now, the issue of traveling. A person who has epilepsy should always see his doctor. Plan to take extra medicines with you, as well as an extra prescription in case of an emergency. And check with your insurance provider about coverage should you need to see a doctor or go to the ER while you're traveling. Take all your prescription medications in their original containers. Always recommend having a letter from your physician on their official letterhead indicating that you do in fact have a seizure disorder and what medicines you are prescribed to be carrying. So if you're planning to travel by air, place your medicines on your carry-on bag, not your checked baggage. It's always good to call the airline ahead of time and let them know about your epilepsy disorder. Make sure you get enough sleep the night before you travel. Even the excitement of travel can affect your seizure threshold. And your doctor may want to give you some Ativan or clonazepam for the night before and the morning of travel to minimize the risk of a seizure breakthrough. So if that's something you haven't considered, definitely I recommend talking with your doctor. And again, do not change the time to take your medicine if you're going into a different time zone, unless it's directed by your healthcare provider. And this is another important reason why you should talk with your healthcare provider before you travel. So let's look at the topic of food, caffeine, and tobacco. There are no known foods that can actually trigger seizures, but a healthy diet is always recommended, and it's very important, with foods that are high in protein, such as fish, cheese, and eggs, because these high proteins create neurotransmitters. Keep your brain hydrated by drinking a lot of water, and exercise your brain by reading, doing puzzles, and problem-solving activities. Now, caffeine is a different story. Caffeine works by changing the chemistry of the brain. There's a chemical in our body called adenosine that is associated with sleep. And when adenosine binds to receptors in the brain, you get drowsy because the nerve cell activity actually slows down. But to a nerve cell, caffeine looks like adenosine. So the caffeine goes ahead and binds to the adenosine receptor, but it doesn't slow down the cell's activity like the real adenosine would. Instead of slowing it down, the cells speed up. Your sleep becomes fragmented, and like I said before, the brain's electrical activity changes during sleep deprivation and makes the brain more susceptible to seizure activity. Then there are some energy drinks that are very popular with our young people. These have names like Monster, Red Bull, and Rockstar. These energy drinks actually contain an inordinate amount of caffeine and some other substances called taurine and guarana seed extract. Taurine has epileptogenic properties. Guarana seed extract contains a mixture of caffeine, theophylline, and theobromine, all which stimulate the central nervous system. And then, believe it or not, tobacco stimulates the release of a neurotransmitter which is called acetylcholine. Acetylcholine excites brain cells, and I've actually seen it provoke seizure breakthroughs in a small portion of people with a pro-epileptic brain. I think it's important to know a little bit about herbal products because many people buy products at a health food store and assume that they're safe, but in fact they're not. Let me begin with aspartame, which is saccharin, and it has been shown that in amounts greater than 34 milligrams per kilo of body weight can play a role in seizure breakthrough. Another substance I've seen is clove and herbal cigarettes, which our young people are smoking these days, have also been seen to play a role in seizure breakthrough. Now, there are cold medicines with certain ingredients that people with epilepsy should not take. I'm going to spell some of these because they're actually so long I can barely pronounce them. One is a decongestant called phenylpropanolamine. That's phenylpropanolamine. There is a cough suppressant called dextromethorphan, dextromethorphan. Diphenhydramine, which is an antihistamine like in Benadryl, and another decongestant called pseudoephedrine, pseudoephedrine. Some of these ingredients have actually been removed by the Food and Drug Administration and are held behind the counter at your pharmacy, but some of you may have some older bottles in your medicine chest, so I think it's important for you to check these ingredients and make sure you're not using them if you need to buy cold medicines over the counter. And two other medications that we commonly find causing a role in seizures are tramadol, which is used for pain, and Wellbutrin for depression or to quit smoking. Many times it is the initial factor in causing a person's first seizure. So let's look at employment. The majority of employment options to people with epilepsy are open, but I think it's important to consider the seizure type and frequency of seizures when considering certain jobs. And people with epilepsy should not consider being a pilot, ambulance driver, a long-haul truck driver, fireman, or police officer. Then there are certain jobs like scaffolding, window cleaning, tree cutting, and roofing that are not recommended because working at heights involves a degree of risk. Fourth, living a fit and healthy life is important, and there are no major contraindications except for activities such as scuba diving, rock climbing, bungee jumping, skydiving, boxing, and swimming. You should always wear a helmet when riding a bike, motorcycle, or horse, You should always wear a seatbelt when traveling in a vehicle. And when playing sports, it's important to wear the proper protective safety equipment. And don't go diving into a pool that has shallow water or a lake that may have some hidden rocks underwater. I want to add a few words about piercings, which is rather popular with our young people. Tongue and eyebrow piercings should be considered relatively dangerous in someone who has epilepsy due to the risk of aspiration or serious laceration during a seizure. So I want to now talk about SUDEP. That's S-U-D-E-P, which is an acronym for Sudden Unexpected Death in Epilepsy. It's relatively rare, and I find that most neurologists don't like talking about it because they don't want to initiate a frightening scenario for patients with epilepsy when the risk of it is small. But I think we empower ourselves when we know as much as we can about our disorder. Now, most people with epilepsy live full, healthy lives, but they should be aware that having epilepsy can occasionally be fatal. So SUDEP, or Sudden Unexpected Death in Epilepsy, like I said, is often ignored, difficult to discuss, and frightening, but it's important to have all the facts. SUDEP applies to sudden death in someone known to have epilepsy in the absence of an obvious cause for the death. It does not always happen during a seizure, and a postmortem examination doesn't always reveal the cause for death. The number of people who die from SUDEP is difficult to determine, but it's estimated to occur in up to 93 people among every 10,000 people with epilepsy. What we do know is that it's more common in cases of uncontrolled tonic-clonic seizures, in those who take more than one seizure medication, males, and those who have seizures in their sleep. Well, in conclusion, I think the more we know about epilepsy, the more we're going to shatter that stigma that is associated with it. And understanding epilepsy is also an important part of control. I want to thank the patients and caregivers who've called in today because you are empowering yourself. Does anyone have any questions for me? No questions?
It should just be open for questions now.
Hello?
Yes.
My name is Kim Redwine. I'm a nurse practitioner working with neurology at the Birmingham VA. I had a patient that told me that she recently read that patients with epilepsy were not allowed to have sexual intercourse.
Well, that is certainly a myth. In some cases, I do understand that the actual act of intercourse can be kind of an exciting, stressful situation because you're concerned you may have a seizure in the middle of it, but definitely not. Patients with epilepsy should have and should definitely enjoy such intercourse.
Yes, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
My name is Jason Sowalter. I'm a 100% disabled American veteran.
Yes, sir.
I had a right temporal lobectomy up in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, at the Stanford Medical Center, Dr. Karen Parko was one of my doctors.
Wonderful.
And one of my questions is, my memory gets kind of messed up here. I forgot now what I was going to ask you. By the way, the last question that she asked you, that's whoever told her about patients that have epilepsy that can't have sex, that's wrong.
That certainly is wrong.
It certainly is wrong. I'm going to say, tell them they can enjoy it and have a good time doing it. So.
Absolutely.
I take two medications. I take Depakote and I take zanonisamide.
Zanonisamide, right.
They just started that. And my body's having a hard time. to get used to it. They're starting to taper me off the Depakote.
And leave you on zonisamide monotherapy?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the properties of Depakote actually are that it has some mood stabilizing properties. So sometimes, as we're coming off one of those kinds of medications, we feel not as good as we used to because we're getting rid of those mood stabilizing properties the medication was exerting.
Okay.
So that could be the thing. That could be.
That's what I thought.
Your body will get used to it.
That's what I was a nurse in the military, too, as a matter of fact. I was a medic in the service, and it was hard. I mean, I was a nurse. A medic in the airport, in the civilian world, is the same as an LVN. All I had to do was take the test. And it was really nice. I liked it. I mean, when I was in the Air Force, they told us, don't get attached to your patients. But that's hard. It's like saying, don't love your brothers or sisters.
Right. I'm very attached to my patients.
Yes. And, I mean, in the civilian world, it was a little bit easier. I didn't take that work home with me as much. But in the military, you're with those guys 24/7.
Absolutely. And I understand.
You have so much, you know. I mean, they're fighting. And it wasn't so much that. It's my family that was back home, those guys that I'm taking care of, they're protecting my family that's back home, too. So that's why, I mean, I love those guys so much. And
very good.
And it was so hard. And I had my first seizure in 1996. And usually children start having seizures. I was like 23 years old, I think, was when I had my first seizure.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talked to the doctors in San Francisco and I asked them, I said, can this help a child? And they said, that's why we want to do this surgery, Jason.
Very good.
Because we think this can help, exactly. We think taking out this scar tissue on your right temple can help a child. And when they did the EEG, they said, we think if, you know, we find a child that has your same type of brain waves and brain pattern,
mm-hmm.
that it can help a child. I said, then do it, because it's not going to cost me anything. I know that. The government's going to pay for it. So, and they did, so I went ahead and had it done. 72 staples they put in my head. It was worth it. I'd do it all over again. And it helped a little bit. I still have them occasionally, but not as bad. And they can't figure out why they're nocturnal. They happen when I'm in my sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I was going to ask you, do you know why
they
happen? Why people have them in their sleep?
Why people have them in sleep? Well, when you fall asleep, your brain waves, the electrical activity of your brain changes more susceptible. This is, of course, for some as a pro-epileptic brain. So your seizures can also change as you get older. So it's very hard for me to, you know, give you answers.
Okay.
Is it possible for us to get a copy of the what we spoke about today?
I would be more than happy to provide this to Ryan and Sean if they would like to distribute it to, especially the medical people who may be on board.
Yes, absolutely. I
give your name to Sean or Ryan, and
have
an email, and I'll be happy to submit it.
Okay, what is your email? Sorry.
Oh, actually, you can actually email me. Denise, D-E-N-I-S-E, dot, Riley, R-I-L-E-Y, and then put the number 2, at V-A, dot, gov, G-O-V.
Okay.
All right?
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Does anyone else have any questions for me?
Yeah, I did. My husband has had epilepsy now for 16 years, but there are the newer nuances of his seizures that I haven't seen before that have kind of come about in the past year or so.
Right.
And I wonder, does that indicate anything, or is that kind of common with you know, how it evolves?
Well, I think it's very important, ma'am, for you to describe these new features to your husband's seizures to the physician, so the physician can try and capture them during an EEG and actually determine if they are, in fact, seizure activity or perhaps something else. I think that would be very important. It's rare that all of a sudden, you know, seizures manifest new features out of the blue.
Yeah, okay.
So I think it would be very important to capture those on EEG.
Okay.
All right? I hope I answered you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
I have one last question, Denise.
Sure.
I noticed with this medication, too, my chest is getting red, and I'm starting to really sweat a lot, and I get really hot,
my throat's
swelling up.
With the zonisamide?
Yeah, I have a hard time breathing.
Well, I think you definitely need to tell your doctor ASAP. You may be having an allergic reaction.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Yes, and I'm not sure how close you are, but then otherwise I'd go to my urgent care center and let them know you started a new medication and you're having adverse findings.
I called and left a message with her. She was a man, so another doctor called me back from the neurology in Fresno. I left a message with her. So.
I think it's prudent if you can get yourself to the urgent care center there at your VA that you do that.
Okay.
All right?
That's what
very important. Right. Anyone else? Well, Sean and Ryan? I thank you both. And
thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for calling in.
Thank you for doing this for us.
It was my pleasure, and I hope I gave some useful, clear information to everyone.
Can I get your website again? Let me get a pen.
It's not my website. It was my email address that I gave the nurse practitioner so that I could send her a copy of what I spoke about.
Could you do that for me?
I don't see why not.
You're
the gentleman with the swollen throat?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I'll tell you what, I would be very happy if you got yourself some medical attention right away, and then I will send it to Dr. Park when she'll know who you are and she'll pass it to you.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, hi. I called in late to the show, and I'd like to know if you're going to have another one.
Specifically on this topic?
Yeah.
I don't think it's planned. I think we have a different talk every month. I will be happy to relay this information to your healthcare provider if you can give me his name, and then they can share it with you.
Okay. Yeah. This is concerning my son. He's had seizures ever since he's come back from Iraq.
Yes, sir.
And he's being treated with Dilantin.
Uh huh.
800 milligrams and. Levetiracetam.
Levetiracetam. Uh-huh.
Yeah, 2000.
Okay.
And he has just experienced another seizure yesterday morning at 9 a.m.
Right.
And he's going through VA hospital, and he's got a nurse practitioner, Judy Ozuna, and we're monitoring all these seizures. He used to have them like every 6 months. And they seem to be getting a lot more frequent, even though he's on different doses. He was just on the Dilantin, then she added the other medicine just a little while ago.
Right, and I'm sure Ms. Ozuna is probably going to be thinking of tapering him off the Dilantin as she stabilizes him on some of these newer medications. I'm not a proponent of Dilantin, even though it is one of the most widely prescribed seizure medications.
Okay.
We do know that long-term use of Dilantin can cause some kind of ugly things like osteoporosis, neuropathy, which is deadening of the nerves in the bottom of the feet.
Your teeth fall out.
Your gums can swell up and start bleeding. You lose your teeth. And also the way the body breaks down Dilantin, it causes real peaks and lows. So a patient may have trouble staying on a therapeutic dose. They get toxic easily or the levels go down. So I'm sure Ms. Ozuna has initiated your son. son on levetiracetam with the plans of eventually getting him off the Dilantin?
Well, right now, we just had a meeting with her a couple days ago, and she wanted to kind of break down or kind of reduce the amount of, what was the name of that,
levetiracetam?
Yeah, levetiracetam. She was trying to cut him down on that, take him off at 500 milligrams off that one.
Okay, she must have her reasons. Maybe it's not working the way she expected it to?
Yeah, he was having a... he seemed to be more weak and lethargic with that one.
I see.
And yet he seemed to have an onset of different, they're like moles.
Moles?
Petty moles, like,
oh, petty
he'll
moles.
Be a deep mole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he'll just all of a sudden just blank out.
Uh-huh.
And we told her about these when we had our meeting, and she says, yeah, this was a seizure that he's experienced, and we had no idea. We figured a seizure was a seizure.
Right.
And yet these blank out stares where he's laying in bed and then not remember that he's doing it, you know. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think the important thing, sir, is for you to write down the different types of events you're seeing.
Yes.
And that you're going to get admitted into a monitoring program where they can actually capture each of these different things you're describing and confirm that they are epileptic seizures. And then being in an epilepsy monitoring unit can also maximize the therapy that the nurse practitioner and her neurologist can prescribe for your son.
So we should talk to Judy and see if she can get him into a monitoring situation, because right now we're just watching him here at home and writing down, you know, whenever these things happen.
Right.
Since these balls were new to us, we had no idea that there was a connection, you know, between those type of seizures, or not a connection, but the different types of seizures that he might be experiencing.
Right. I think it's important if the patient is not responding to medication, that monitoring of the events in order to identify the seizures, classify them, maximize therapy, and give the best opinion and medical treatment would be to evaluate with EEG 24/7.
Yes. EEGs, right, okay. So I should talk to Judy about maybe EEG monitoring?
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
I hope that answered and helped you a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry I couldn't get into the beginning of the program to see if other people had any kids that came back from Iraq that are experiencing the same thing.
Yes, well, we're definitely seeing more of our young people coming back from Iraq with seizures.
Yeah.
But it's important to go monitoring, because importantly, not derp, twitch is a seizure, and when some of our veterans are coming back, they're on medication, and so we
sure.
have to really decipher who's having true epileptic seizures and who's not.
Sure, right, I agree, yeah.
Okay,
very good.
I will send
thank
my
you so much.
To Judy Azuna, okay?
Yes, I will. Thanks so much.
Okay.
I'll be praying for my brother.
Hello?
Thank you very much, yeah.
Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, who's the gentleman that's on the line there just spoke up there?
I'm a fellow veteran. I'm 100% disabled as well. I developed epilepsy in the service.
What service were you in?
I was in the Air Force. I was a
medic.
In
the Air Force. And you were over there at the same time, over in Iraq?
No, actually, I never did go. I was in Bosnia. I went in. I was in from 1993 to 97.
And you came back and you were experiencing a...
Yeah, when I was in Bosnia, but...
Huh.
I never did end up going to Iraq. I brought patients. I saw the little war. I didn't
okay.
see the big one, but.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome,
no
sir.
No problem.
Was the lady?
Hello?
Yes.
My name is Althea. I joined the call late, and I was just wondering, I'm a nurse at the VA in West Palm Beach.
Yes, ma'am.
I was wondering if there is any information. I was in a meeting and I just ran back and
no problem.
Yes, if it's possible for you to email it to me. Is there a PowerPoint or I'm not sure what you use.
Well, I didn't have a PowerPoint, but I'm going to give you my email address.
Okay.
You send me a little email and I'll send it to you. It's Denise dot Riley ILY. Put the number 2, so Denise.Riley2 at VA.com.
I'll email you right now.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All right.
Thank you, Denise. I appreciate that.
My pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for